The stage is set. Listen and be heard. Because Pilipinas is now on a bigger platform. Hosted by Cookie Tuazon with Marty Tenko, they will feature spoken word acts, tackle topics that keep the mic alive, and the community of artists inspired.
My name is Cookie.
My name is Marty.
Welcome to Because Pilipinas, where ideas and words matter. We are the show that talks about literature outside the confines of your typical classroom. We feature spoken word, poetry, and creativity as one.
Woohoo!
Today is all about caring for the mind, the awareness that proper care is needed for sanity, for our mental health. Marty!
Yes, Cookie!
Who's on your list of positive representations of people with mental health issues?
I'd say Samuel Dawson in the movie I Am Sam.
Oh, I know that one.
And Mary Daisy Dinkle and Max Jerry Horowitz in the claymation Mary and Max.
Oh, I've seen that one too.
You were the one who told me about this film. How about you, Cookie?
Oh, the film A Beautiful Mind. It tells the story of John Nash, a famous mathematician who has schizophrenia.
Oh yes, I love that film.
Also on my list is Forrest Gump, who is labeled as intellectually disabled with an IQ of 75, but also shows signs of ASD, autism spectrum disorder.
Yes, love that film too.
The movie Rain Man.
Ooh,
today
yes.
Known for being one of the first movies to feature someone with autism, Raymond Babbitt. Also on the spectrum with various social quirks, reclusive poet Emily Dickinson. And the character of Sheldon Cooper on the show,
yes.
The Big Bang Theory, is often associated with Asperger's.
That's true.
Oh, and Anthony Hopkins, diagnosed Ooh. With Asperger's, is also a positive representation of someone who has issues with mental health.
Most definitely.
Those six individuals are exceptionally brilliant for me. Yes. In spite of.
Definitely.
Okay, Marty, how about mental health in literature? Which books captured your mind?
ChildMindInstitute.org has a list of books in helping kids understand emotional and learning challenges.
Oh, okay.
Here are some. A Case of the Zaps, written by Alex Buniello and April Lavallier, illustrated by James Kwan. A Story of a Kid Robot Who Sometimes Gets The Zaps provides a clever way to introduce the concept of anxiety to kids as well as ways to manage it.
Okay.
Don't Feed the Worry Bug, written and illustrated by Andy Green. In this whimsical rhyming book, Vince, the monster of worries, learns that the more he worries, the more the pesky worry bug grows. Eventually, the worry bug grows so big that it can't be ignored, and Vince knows he needs to do something. The book does a good job of illustrating how anxiety can become overwhelming and teaches kids how they can take charge of their anxiety.
Wow!
Yeah! Ellie on the Mat, written by Danielle Marie Price, illustrated by Nana Gonzalez. One day, Ellie was feeling too grumpy to eat pancakes. Her mom says, "That happens sometimes," and gets a yoga mat out of the closet. Ellie and her mom do various yoga poses and breathing exercises. Then, it's pancake time! A good introduction to mindfulness and yoga, this book highlights how trying something new can improve feelings.
That sounds cool!
Yeah, right? How Big Are Your Worries, Little Bear? By Janine Sanders, illustrated by Stephanie Fizer Coleman. Anxious about school, soccer practice, and monsters under his bed, Baby Bear worried day and night, despite his family telling him to stop worrying. But when his mom began encouraging him to talk about and even draw out his worries, the feelings began to subside.
Aww.
Right? Ruby Finds a Worry, written and illustrated by Tom Percival. This brilliantly illustrated story stands out for helping kids visualize anxiety and see how it grows. While playing at the park, Ruby discovers a worry. It's depicted as a yellow blob with googly eyes that starts out small but gets bigger and bigger. Eventually, it stops her from doing the thing she loves, and she can't stop thinking about it. But when she sees a boy sitting on a park bench next to a worry of his own, she starts to talk to him. Then, both of their worries begin to fade.
Aww.
How about you, Cookie?
The Virgin Suicides by Jeffrey Eugenides. It's a novel that was adapted into Sofia Coppola's first feature film. It delves into what it's like inside a 13-year-old girl's mind. The main protagonists are the Lisbon sisters. The novel is written from the perspective of the boys that the Lisbon sisters go to school with and who struggle to find the reason why the sisters are so peculiar. The sisters are isolated from the boys in their town, making them more susceptible to their depression and their suicidal ideation. Look at the lives of five young girls who were ignored by an entire town until it was too late. Well, it's not something you would want to happen.
Definitely.
Another book that comes to mind is The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath.
Oh, yes.
A novel primarily from the real-life accounts of Sylvia Plath. It's a narrative that balances the line between truth and fiction and dives into Plath's own descent into mental illness. The protagonist goes through clinical depression or bipolar disorder. The novel looks at electroshock therapy as a way to fix patients. While I like the immersion feeling for the characters involved, I personally think that you have to be in good spirits before reading those books.
That's true.
Otherwise, it could make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
On poetry and spoken word about mental health, Marty, which ones do you think are notable?
I found the poem entitled The Conditional by Ada Limon. Here it goes. Say tomorrow doesn't come. Say the moon becomes an icy pit. Say the sweet gum tree is petrified. Say the sun's a foul black tire fire. Say the owl's eyes are pinpricks. Say the raccoon's a hot tar stain. Say the shirt's plastic ditch litter. Say the kitchen's a cow corpse. Say we never get to see it. Bright future stuck like a bum star. Never coming close, never dazzling. Say we never meet her. Never him. Say we spend our last moments staring at each other. Hands knotted together, clutching the dog, watching the sky burn. Say it doesn't matter. Say that would be enough. Say you'd still want this. Us alive, right here, feeling lucky.
That's a nice one.
Yep, how about you, Cookie?
Oh, OCD by Neil Hilborn. The Fury of Rainstorms by Anne Sexton. When the Fat Girl Gets Skinny by Blythe Beard. Ode to Melancholy by John Keats, and Wild Geese by Mary Oliver.
What a list.
You guys out there may also refer to episode 7. I remember mentioning Broken Isn't Beautiful by Eleanor.
Yes.
To this day, it still moves me.
Yes, it's a favorite.
Mm-hmm. Now let's welcome the first in our lineup of guests to give to you a version of mental health in his poetry. Here's Jacek Dalan with I Used to Be Happy.
I used to be happy, which is the same as saying I had everything to lose and I lost them. Now I have fresh bread and I'm sad. I have a friend and lover and I'm sad. I have a body and it exists as its phantom limb. I live as an afterthought. If I cut my fingers off, I'm not cutting my fingers. I'm cutting my body's fingers. I hold you, and I'm not holding you. I bite my poems, and the thoughts escape my tongue. I mutilate my metaphors. I cut my lines unevenly, my life into fragments, imprecise, unrhythmic. Its better parts bastardize into prefixes. The images kidnap. I'm hoping to piece together some semblance of meaning, to substantiate my sadness, to half-bake my vices. I'm sorry. Mother, I am sorry, love, I am sorry, God. I have bread, and it crumbles into sand in my mouth. My fingers falling off joins my jaws, failing to hold teeth. How do I hold what I wanted to hold? I can feel my heart ripping, slipping through the gaps between my ribs, I want you to tell me that I still exist here. That I'm standing in front of you, biting this bread. That it is hot, and it tastes like a Sunday morning. That I have fingers, and I have hands, and I have arms, and it's all connected to me. Do you understand? Tell me you understand. Please tell me that you understand. Please.
Next, we have here Cheyenne Bennett with Tumingin Ka Nang Nakapikit.
Sa harap ng maraming tao, madaling maging hindi ako. Madaling magubli ng anyo. Tumawa ng malakas at ibulsa ang naluha ang panyo. Sa harap ng madla, madali para sa akin ang tumula. Nang hindi nila alam na kapag mag-isa, ako'y tulala. Umiiyak ng walang babala. Ang hindi nila alam, sa lakas ng tinig ko sa entablado kapag mag-isa, rumaragasa ang damdamin ko na walang hinto, walang tinig ngunit maingay ang pabulong na hiyaw ng mga multo. Ako, kapag mag-isa, ay lumuluha. Hindi ko iniinda ang pamamata ng iba. Hindi ko ramdam ang mga paa na sa ulo ko ay nakasampa. Hindi ako tinatablan dahil pader ko ay matibay na sanggalang. Hindi ako tinatablan dahil marami na akong sinabihan ng saan ka nang kailangan kita. Nasaan ka ng mga panahon na kailangan ko ng kasangga. Mistulang pusang galang umahanap ng masisilungan laban sa mainit na mga panghuhusga. Papapasukin ko pa ba sila? Kung sa loob ko mismo marami ng pulang mata. Ako, kapag mag-isa, ay lumuluha. Kung gusto mong mabasa ang damdamin na hindi nakasulat sa letra, tumingin ka nang nakapikit. Tumingin ka sabik sa yakap. Pero ilag sa lumalapit, bumibitaw, tumutulak habang ganid sa pagkapit. Bumubulong, tumitikom, tumatahimik na pasigaw. Ngumingiti, humahalakhak, ngunit mga mata ay maginaw. Kung gusto mong mabasa ang damdamin na hindi nakasulat sa letra, kung gusto mong sumagip na mga pasuko ng kaluluwa, tumingin ka nang nakapikit. Dahil kadalasan, sumasabay ako sa paglakad sa dalampasigan. Ngunit hindi ko ibig ang mamasyal. Nais kong lumihis ng lakad at lumusong sa karagatan. Lumusong sa karagatan. Lumusong sa karagatan. Lumusong sa karagatan na wala ng ahunan. Kung gusto mong mabasa ang damdamin na hindi nakasulat sa letra, tumingin ka nang nakapikit.
Marty.
Yes, Miss Cookie.
What was the cure like back in the day for those who are suffering from mental disorder?
Guys, before I continue, as Cookie mentioned earlier, this episode is a continuation of episode 7, Monumental Health in Writing. Do check it out.
Yep.
Okay, so going back. According to the National Institutes for Stress, Anxiety, and Depression.ngo, as well as historycooperative.org, the understanding of mental treatment was hugely supernatural in the ancient periods, where mental illness, or any illness for that matter, was seen as the work of evil spirits, vengeful gods, or sorcery. Thus, the methods for treating mental illnesses were downright brutal, and often resolved to drilling a big hole through the skull in order to release the evil spirits,
Whoa. A
procedure known as trepanation. Scary, right?
Yeah.
This procedure was also used for non-psychological issues such as epilepsy and headaches. The small pieces of the skull cut out would usually be worn as a lucky charm to keep evil spirits away. This was a very common procedure that dates back as far as 7,000 years ago and was practiced in places as diverse as ancient Greece, France, Portugal, North and South America, Africa, Polynesia, and the Far East, including Russia. Ancient Greece, on the other hand, went in the other direction. During the 5th and 3rd centuries BCE, the Greeks changed the way that psychological disorders were viewed. The philosopher and physician Hippocrates stepped away from the superstitious beliefs and suggested that mental illness stemmed from imbalances in the body. These imbalances were in the four essential fluids, which are blood, phlegm, bile, and black bile, which produce unique personalities of individuals. In order to restore the body's balance, the Greeks used techniques such as phlebotomies, bloodletting, purging, and imposing diets on the afflicted.
Whoa.
That is brutal.
Yeah.
At the time, surgeons thought that blood was created and used rather than circulating around the body. This led to thinking blood could stagnate in the body and could cause mental and physical illness unless removed. This practice was in most cases harmful rather than beneficial, as there was a high risk of infection and catching diseases, especially if the procedure was done by putting the recommended 50 leeches on your body.
Whoa.
Right? 50 leeches.
That's a lot.
I think you're gonna die. The leeches would be shared among patients. Ew, dirty. Thus, it made the risk of infections very high. Patients would also be given laxatives and emetics to make them vomit to restore the other humors.
I don't know what to say.
I also don't know what to say. Also, Hippocrates had ideas about hysteria in women could be caused by a wandering womb. The word hysteria derived from the Greek for womb, and what the ancient Greeks or Romans or Arabs would consider to be hysteria was in fact a wide range of psychological disorders, from schizophrenia to panic attacks, which of course would happen to men as well as women. But the womb was to blame, as it was believed to be able to wander around freely in the body all the way up to the throat, causing feelings of suffocation in the woman along with other physical as well as mental illness. That is a very weird notion.
I know.
The womb was believed to have one weakness, sense. I didn't know our womb had a nose. Pleasant smells near the vagina would lure the womb back in place. Foul smells for the woman to sniff would also make the womb wander back into place. Pregnancy was prescribed in order to keep the bored, wandering womb in place. Running or other forms of exercise were close to forbidden, as the womb was thought to be able to fall out from such activities.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. There is silver lining in ancient civilizations' treatment with mental illness. Ancient Persians may also have believed that the illnesses were caused by demons, but they practiced precautionary measures such as personal hygiene and purity of the mind and body in order to prevent and protect one from diseases.
Finally.
Finally.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
Similarly, the Egyptians recommended that those stricken with mental illness should participate in recreational activities in order to relieve symptoms, which displayed that, as a civilization, the Egyptians were very advanced in their treatment of mental handicaps. In ancient Rome, there was Asclepiades of Bithynia, who established a more humane approach to mental illness. Asclepiades believed that mental illness should be treated with harmony-restoring activities such as fresh air, bath, exercise, music, massage, and occupational therapy. He even prescribed for the patients to have conversations with well-established philosophers over a glass of wine.
That's a good one.
I think that is a very highly recommended to this day. How about you, Cookie?
Okay, time for trivia.
Yes!
Which artists made art about mental health?
Okay.
Vincent van Gogh is perhaps the most notable individual when looking at the link between mental health and artistic genius.
Ooh.
Best known for cutting off his left ear, an act that he could not remember afterwards. Whoa. Van Gogh created around 150 paintings during the year he spent in a psychiatric clinic in Saint-Rémy de Provence.
Wow.
He was said to have suffered from depression, anxiety, and bipolar disorder. Another artist, Francisco de Goya, had mental health problems such as depression, mood swings, and hallucinations. His art was a way to cope with his suffering.
Oh.
Artist Edvard Munch suffered from depression, anxiety, and probably schizophrenia. He refused treatment for some time. Eventually, he was committed to sanatorium several times in the years from 1905 to 1909.
Whoa.
After his stay at these institutions, his mental health improved significantly. Because of this, his art changed. His painting started looking brighter and less gloomy since he felt better and mentally more stable.
That's amazing.
Yep.
And inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's Serena Narita with Stress Response.
Stress Response. Flight, my preferred way to move forward. But why am I not going anywhere? Fantasy, to envision my world. But why do I still it the same? Calming breaths to catch myself. But why am I lost in the first place? Writing it down to steady my mind, but I find myself with more questions. A storm that I ignored was brewing. My sails were not ready, but I have to sail and cast off. When I sink, then I need to swim. I have to swim. I cannot drown again. I want to survive. I want to live.
Marty.
Yes, Miss Cookie.
In today's popular culture, which movies that tackle depression and other mood disorders are worth mentioning?
The two movies on the top of my head are Inside Out and Three Idiots.
Ah!
How about you, Cookie?
My picks, Little Miss Sunshine and Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, wow.
I think they're worth watching again.
Yes.
Does writing have benefits, Marty? Is writing therapeutic for anyone struggling with mental health?
I'll speak for myself. Remember when you suggested that I write down whenever I'm confused and frustrated?
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, it took me ages to take your advice, but when I did, it helped me sort my emotions and understand myself better.
Ah, good for you.
Thanks, Cookie!
Let me mention the benefits of reading with regards to mental health.
Yes, right. I'm taking notes.
Number one, you feel relaxed.
Yes.
There's a study that reading silently for just 6 minutes was enough to slow down the heart rate and ease tension in the muscles, in turn reducing stress. Number two, you get the best night's sleep possible. Reading before bed can help your mind wind down, help you ease into sleep, resulting in a better night's sleep than if you use screen-based activity before bed.
Yep, that's true.
Number three, you develop empathy. Reading fiction can increase it by allowing yourself to become emotionally connected to the experiences of the characters. With the increase of the ability to relate to others and improve communications. Empathy can also be self-directed. Rather than being hard on ourselves and thinking negatively about our thoughts and actions, we can show empathy and understanding towards our own experience in the same way we would others. Number four, reading gives you access to experience. Reading about other similar situations related to yours can help you feel that you are not alone in the experience, that your experience is valid.
Yep.
Moving on to our lineup here, we give you Edward Darwin Castan with Walang Tulog.
Walang Tulog. May kinukubling nila lang ang kama na hindi makita sa baba ng kutsyon. Kahit sa ibabaw ng payapang uunan o mahanap man lang sa piling ng kumot. Ngunit maririnig ang lakas ng hilik, hiwatig na nariyan siya at katabi. Abalang hanap ko ang aking katabi habang nakahiga sa taas ng kama. Akin pa rin dinig ang lakas ng hilik, hindi ko man tanaw sa rabaw ng kutsyon o sa ilalim man ng lukot na kumot. Kahit sa malambot na punda ng unan. Aking sinisilip sa punda ng una ng hinahanap kong ingay ng katabi. Inaapuhap ko sa bukol ng kumot na muling nahulog sa baba ng kama na nangangalay na sa bigat ng kutsyon at naririndi rin sa ingay ng hilik. Ayaw magpatulog ng tunog ng hilik na hindi nasipad sa punda ng unan sa nakahilatang kay tamad na kutsyon. Ay, wala. Mula sa hindi matagpong katabi na malamang nariyan banda sa may kama o kaya ay nasa ilalim ng kumot, aking iniangat ang nadapang kumot. Umasang matagpo doon ang nahilik. Ngunit, wala naman. Wala rin sa kama. Kinapkob kong muli ang payapang unan at wala. Wala doon ang aking katabi. Ayaw magpakita, wala din sa kutsyon, para akong trumpong naikot sa kutsyon, kaya lukot-lukot itong aking kumot. Kahanap lamang sa aking katabing ayaw magpatulog ng lakas ng hilik. Hindi maapuhap sa tulog kong unan o matagpuan man sa baba ng kama, ay... Hindi matagpo ang aking katabi, kaya tangan-tangan itong aking unan para akong timang sa himpilang kutsyon.
We would like to thank Suzette Tuas and Rubio for her support.
Ooh, thank you so much!
Hi Suzette, hi Scruffy, hi Ronald. Make your thoughts amount to something bright and beautiful. Mind your creative selves.
Yes, amen!
I'm Cookie.
I'm Marty.
Thank you for listening to Because Filipinas!